What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose. You know
it's Taz and Moose. Hey. It is Taz and the Moose with you, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Mike Pete across the way, Bogus, has got your updates and sitting in with me for a vacationing Taz here on this Tuesday morning. As we got another hour left to play with, we're going to talk a little Cowboys football a little later on this hour as Jane Slater covers the Dallas Cowboys for the National Football League. We'll join Andrew, myself, and that's coming your way about 20 minutes from now. So look forward to that conversation. I mentioned CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico, go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Let's get to it. Here we go, third and final hour. Here's the three.
It is now time for the three. We get you caught up on the three biggest headlines of the day with Taz and the Moose. Number one.
Freddie Kitchen responds to Bob Wiley's criticism, vows to fire any Brown staffer leaking information.
Yeah, so let's go back. Bob Wiley, former offensive line coach with the Browns, was a guest right here on CBS Sports Radio of Zach Gelb. And here is Wiley talking about the fact that how surprised he was that Freddie Kitchens got the head coaching job at Cleveland.
That shocked me a little bit because Greg Williams actually turned the team around. Greg Williams did in the second half of the season that his work. That was his work that got it to where it is. Okay? And then, Greg wasn't. He got the interview. Okay? But I think Greg, my own personal feeling, is Greg was stronger candidate for the seat. And I don't think Dorsey wanted to go head to head, okay, like he had to do with Andy Reid, in Kansas City. So he kind of filtered Greg out of the picture, and he kept the search going. And then Freddie, who Baker likes Freddie, there's a good relationship there. Even though Kenny Zampezi did all the coaching there, okay, Baker likes Freddie, so they need that. Had to filter into the decision, right, to keep Freddie because he didn't have any coordinating experience and he doesn't have any head coaching experience. Now, Greg Williams had coaching experience. You could tell that it came out. That team, right, the team played and it played hard, okay, and it was wonderful to watch the kids play under Greg.
So there you have it. That was Wiley on Zach Gelb's show. Now here is Kitchens yesterday addressing the Wiley comments. Take a listen.
I never wanted any appreciation. I've never asked for any tooting of my horn or anything like that, but we seem to ask for it. But what about the players? What did the players do? Did they have anything to do with the turnaround? Because I really, truly feel that this game is about the players. It's not about me. It's not about Bob. It's not about the staff. Our job is to get them ready to play. It's about them. But when do they get their credit? Because they had to make a conscious decision to turn it around, and they did that. So I would say that about the comments. It doesn't matter. Bob doesn't wear brown and orange anymore. All right? I had the opportunity to hire Bob. I didn't want to. I went to the hospital to see Bob every week he was in the hospital. All right. I FaceTimed Bob before every game, before we went out as a staff, just so he would continue to feel a part of it. So at what point does Bob realize that it was the players and not the coaches that turned it around?
Yeah, I think it's jealousy, scorned, however you want to phrase it. The relationship between Kitchens and Wiley is long gone. And I think Kitchens talking tough is a message to the rest of his assistants. He doesn't have to keep the assistants in the holdovers, even after the success that they had a year ago. And I think it's just if you ask me which is a poor look, what, you know, Kitchen's tough talk yesterday or Wiley, you know, Andrew, I'd probably have to tell you, I think Bob Wiley looks worse for the wear.
Yeah, and I see your point. I'm still stuck on Kitchens now. The new thing, and you put this in my head at the top of the broadcast, like his theory there and his point about, you know, the players did this. When we give the players credit, on one hand, I mean, obviously the players did it, but it's because Hugh was gone and Freddie and Greg Williams did a good job in rallying those players and putting them in position to be good at their job and have success. But when you stand there and go, the players were responsible for this, then that means that you shouldn't have this job, Freddie. I mean, you got the job partially on the job you did last year.
With Mayfield.
In fixing things with Mayfield to make him be good, to make them score points. The defense was better and they won some football games. So, you know, it's also about the coaches here as well. And all of those things that Bob Wiley said, now, whether he should have said them out loud is a different conversation, but he said them, and we heard them, and some of those things we thought beforehand. And, you know, if it's true that this is more about Zampezi on offense than Freddie Kitchens, and they're going to miss Greg Williams, you know, it helps me feel a little more confident in my thought that this year is not going to go as well as people think in Cleveland. The Browns are being oversold now. The question is just how much they're being oversold. Are they really an 8-win team, a 7-win team? They're going to win 10 or 11? Like, that's obviously the question we're going to find out once we get to September and even farther. But, you know, the things that Bob Wiley said, taken with a grain of salt, fuel my concerns with this team and the way it's been put together and the way about the guys who are in charge of it right now.
Yeah, and I can understand that. And there's been a lot of heat. And if they crash and burn, they're going to be one of the great disappointments in recent memory.
Because yeah.
I think everybody and their mother expecting the Cleveland Browns to have a bounce forward season coming off of what was a really good finish despite the loss to Baltimore in Week 17 to close out last year. But a very good step forward season a year ago. So, you know, I do think that is fascinating when you look at it. And for Kitchens here, I agree with you. I'm done addressing Bob Wiley here moving forward.
Right.
If someone asks me about him, who? I don't care. I don't care what he has to say. I don't care about any of that because now it's becoming an unnecessary distraction that the Cleveland Browns don't need.
Not even a little bit. And the bigger picture is they're going to have more detractors, whether it's guys who were on the inside, who are now talking. You know, there might be another Bob Wiley who feels jilted by not still having a job in Cleveland and maybe asked the right questions by somebody and gives us more possible dirt on this situation. Or it's just going to be the normal kind of haters you get when you have success. You know, this one obviously is different. It's a little more personal, so maybe that's why there's a little more pushback from Freddie Kitchens. But they all better have thick skin because there's more coming, and they can't let all of these things get in their head in any little bit.
All right, next.
Number two.
Tom Brady can still become a free agent in 2020 despite new contract.
So we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about Brady getting a new two-year deal from the Patriots. Then you read the tea leaves, you find people dive deeper into that contract, and in essence what it is, and, you know, I misread it initially, but what it is a deal that pays them $8 million more this year. They get $5.5 million of salary cap space because they're able to spread the guaranteed money over the course of 3 years. But the two-year extension that he signed is all voidable after the season. So, in essence, it's a one-year contract.
And I guess this,
where Brady gets paid.
Right.
He's making $23 million this year.
And my complaint that the extension is basically, you know, nonsense. It's fake. It's not even real. I guess this is the year that makes it real. And then the years two and three end up are the voidable ones. It just still
but
seems
still under contract for this year.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Not like he showed up at camp without contract.
And they reconfigured this year. So it ends up kind of being like a new 3-year contract on a 2-year extension with one real year and two voidable years to get around my kind of hang up on the deal. Not with them, because they should use every way to manipulate the salary cap and save themselves space. And everyone does these tricks. That's fine. In fact, actually, this is apparently the first time they've done a deal with voidable years, but it happens around the league. So that's a bigger conversation, not a Patriots knock. I wish that this took us down the road farther to Brady flirting with other teams. There's like a 1% chance we get drama in the winter, but it would be stunning if this turns into any kind of real negotiations, bargaining, back and forth. They cleaned up some salary cap issues
they
yesterday.
Did.
What did he say?
It is
what it is. There's like no reason to celebrate. It's not a big deal. Not a weight off their shoulders. No one was sweating it. They just signed some new paperwork and they move on to again winning the AFC East probably easily.
Let's hear from the particulars. Here is Brady talking about his new deal. Take a listen.
It is what it is. That's a good line. So whoever said it, it's very pertinent. So like I said, there's a lot of guys who have, you know, 1 year left on their contract. So the situation, I got 1 year to go and we'll see what happens.
Bill Belichick, what says you?
On the Brady contract, it's always good to come to an agreement with a player, any player. So, you know, that's a good thing. And I'm not going to talk about the contract, so we'll move on from that and focus on what we're here for, which is a great opportunity to work against the Lions.
Yeah, so Belichick doesn't want to talk about it. He's happy to have Brady under contract, and, you know, for the most part, as we know, it's still a one-year deal, and Brady was under contract for this upcoming year, so nothing really changes. But, you know, even with the possibility of him hitting free agency in the open market, I use the word stunned. It would be, I think, one of the great upsets in terms of player movement that I probably will ever witness. If I ever see Brady move on and decide to say thanks but no thanks and move on from the Patriots and decide to go someplace else, I'd be flabbergasted, stunned, picked whatever adjective you'd like to describe. I just cannot imagine him putting on another jersey.
What if he continues his anti-Jimmy Garoppolo push? Garoppolo struggles this year. Niners don't play well. He lets John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan know he wants to finish his career near where he grew up. And he knocks Garoppolo off the Niner roster and he takes that job because he's finally a free agent. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean. But at 43 years of age, I think Tom Brady realizes he's in a really, really good spot. An organization that takes
care
of him.
He's in the best spot.
Yeah, I mean,
there's going to be no better spot.
All they do is win. I'm sure, you know, he's able to vacation and visit Northern California during the course of the offseason. He's got plenty of time for that and plenty of money to be able to hop on any jet at any time and go wherever the hell he wants to go in the world. I mean, that's the kind of money and the wealth that we're talking about with Tom Brady. I don't think this is going to be his last year. I don't think there's anything to do with that. I think as long as Tom Brady continues to play like we think he's capable of playing, I think Brady is going to make it to that 45 years of age. A goal of
all
his.
As a Patriot.
All as a Patriot, which would be remarkable. Yeah, would you be surprised if they win another Super Bowl this year?
Of course not.
No. I mean, we just had, who'd we just have? We had Matt Chatham on, right? Talking about the talent of the defense. I mean, this is not a Patriot team that's not going anywhere. They're not doing it with smoke and mirrors. It's a really, really talented Patriots team going into the 2019 campaign. All right, next.
Number 3.
Vince Carter will return for his 22nd season in the NBA.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It's remarkable. People can poke fun and talk about his age, as we did a little bit earlier on, Andrew. But to playing even as a role player and a bit player, competitive NBA basketball at 42 years of age is remarkable.
Mikey B whispered in my ear before that Vince Carter is older. I'm sorry, he's been in the league longer than four Hawks have been alive.
That's crazy.
There are four sub-21-year-old Hawks, and Vince Carter's going towards year 22. And certainly, I mean, he's hanging on in the truest sense of the term here, Moose, but he's also can be useful still. Now, he's more useful in kind of a leadership role with the Hawks, and that's what he is signing up for again here. But the Hawks have, you know, have some uptick in them this year. And if Vince Carter had chosen to go, and Mike can correct me if I'm wrong here, but if he had chosen to go to a bigger contender, a better contender, I think there would have been a spot for Vince Carter to give you a handful of points per game, go sit back down the bench, manage his minutes, manage his game. So, yes, is he anywhere close to an elite player? Of course not. But he's also not some fat dude out of shape demanding playing time. I mean, he can still do some things at 42, which is also crazy for a guy whose game was predicated on his extreme athleticism, which he doesn't have anymore, obviously.
No, but he could shoot the ball from the outside.
Exactly.
Now So he's changed and adapted his game. And the idea that he is looked at whatever role that there is, but the fact that there is a role for him in the NBA at 42, soon to be 43 years of age, is remarkable. When you see other guys, former players, they're now broadcasters, and you see what their body is like after the ravages of the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, and Vince Carter came into the league, played a lot of college hoops at North Carolina as well.
Right. Yeah, it's
but he'll be back with the Hawks
back
next year.
And breaking all NBA. He's going to, I think I mentioned this in an update before, when we get to actual 2020 and he plays a game in that calendar year, the first player in NBA history to appear in four decades.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
That is insane when you think about it. So there you have it. Your three big stories here on this Tuesday morning. When you look at it, the big news surrounding Vince Carter signing that one-year deal. He's going to be playing basketball. The contract for Tom Brady ends up being just a one-year deal. He gets $8 million additional money, $5.5 million of salary cap space for the New England Patriots. And then Freddie Kitchen firing back an offensive line coach, former offensive line coach Bob Wiley, for his comments that you heard right here on CBS Sports Radio with the one and only Zach Gelb. It's Taz and the Moose, Andrew in for the vacationing Taz, right here on CBS Sports Radio. Support for Taz and the Moose comes from Manscaped, number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. It is a fantastic product. Take care of all your manscaping, everything that you need to do, and no fear of nicks and cuts or anything like that. That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past, thank God. And don't use the same trimmer on your face as you're using down there. That's just nasty and gross. Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing bowl deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting in deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? You need to do that there. Take care of it. You want to smell nice all over. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TAZ, T-A-Z, at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TAZ, T-A-Z, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use promo code TAZ, T-A-Z.
You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
That's right. On this Tuesday morning, we're going to talk a little Cowboys football. Jane Slater is going to join us, talk a little Dallas Cowboys football, NFL Network. Bogus is filling in for Taz all week long. He's on vacation, well-deserved. He's also getting your updates throughout the course of the morning, too. So a little double-dip scenario, and he's got CBS Sports Minutes later, too.
Oh, can't wait. How about that?
Got it all.
I don't know what time it's going to air, but be ready sometime in the afternoon.
He's got it all.
Dumbfounded by my deep thoughts
no
in
doubt.
Sports. Yes.
What's
I'm Andrew
going
Bogus. For now, we begin with college hoops. How about that on an August morning? USC landed a commitment from arguably the top recruit in the class of 2020 yesterday. That's 7-footer Evan Mobley. His brother Isaiah, also a 5-star prospect, is a freshman this fall for the Trojans. So how do they get these awesome basketball-playing brothers? You might want to go back to March of 2018, Moose, when Andy Enfield hired their dad, Eric, as an assistant coach.
Nice. Listen, that all works. It's all on the straight and narrow.
Mm. Now, his dad was, I believe, an AAU coach, so it wasn't like they just hired dad to be an assistant off of nothing.
Well, how long is his dad going to be on that Andy Enfield staff when his sons are gone from USC?
See, that's a good question. I don't know if you need to cover your tracks at all, like if there is a correct predetermined buffer zone to be like, oh, no, this had nothing to do with Evan and Isaiah going to the NBA.
Well, Michael Porter went to Missouri.
Yes, their dad went there with them.
Right. Now, Michael Porter is now, you know, 1 year into his NBA career, you know, injury ravaged.
Right.
Hoping that he plays this year, right?
Oh, so I think Javonte is still... Was he just in this draft? The other brother?
I don't know. Maybe he's... Oh, is he still there?
I don't know.
Is he still at Missouri?
I don't know.
But it was... I mean, wasn't it more surrounding Michael than anything else?
Yes.
Okay. Is his dad still on the Missouri staff?
I couldn't tell you. Has Missouri been a coaching change? I mean, the only thing I know about Missouri basketball is that Michael Porter...
there was a coaching change. You're right.
Played
was,
one game and got hurt.
But that's... I mean, it's so... It is so bad when you look at it. It reeks so bad. The fact that what these teams and programs do in order to get these players to come on for a year or two.
Yeah.
It really is.
Meanwhile, my Fordham Rams can't even hire a dad to be an assistant coach to maybe get his kids to come there.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Moose, as you know well, so few visitors can win in Baltimore these days, but the Yankees have no such issues on Orioles turf. Let me find the highlight that I didn't load into my script. Here it is.
Here's the 1-1. Swung on, a long drive to right. That ball is high, it is far, it is gone. Mike Ford has homered over the high right field wall to give the Yankees a lead. Oh, there's a Ford in the Yankee future. Mike, is Ford tough?
Shut up!
John Sterling on Yankees radio.
32 home runs they've hit at Camden Yards.
Well, we're getting there. Mike Tauchman followed a two-run shot, a 9-6 win in Baltimore after blowing a 6-1 lead. Those 32 homers, the last five of them came last night. That is the single-season record for a visiting team in one particular stadium. And they have at least two more games in Baltimore today and tomorrow. I'm not sure they go back again before the year is over, but they have destroyed Camden Yards this year. The Rays took a 2-0 loss from the Blue Jays last night. The Red Sox held off the Royals 7-5 to end their 8-game skid. And the Twins disappointed the Braves 5-3 on Miguel Sano's pinch-hit 2-run homer bottom nine. The Dodgers blanked the Cardinals 8-0. The Brewers snapping their 4-game skid 9-7 in Pittsburgh. Two homers for Christian Yelich. That gives him 39 this season. That now leads the major leagues. Mike Trout would be next with 37. The Cubs held off the A's 6-5. Philly a 7-3 win in Arizona. And the Nationals a 4-0 win over the San Francisco Giants. Moose?
All right. Thank you, Andrew. Let's hit the guest line right now. Let's welcome aboard Jane Slater, NFL Network. Covers the Cowboys. She does a fantastic job. Hey, Jane, Mark Melusis and Andrew Bogish with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Yeah, don't worry. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you got it, Jane. Let's start here. Talking up Tony Pollard. Let's start with Zeke. and that's the big thing because that team is really built around the running back that's now in Cabo at his agent's house. I don't care what Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones have to say about Pollard or any other running back on that team. I mean, they know that they're not going to go where they want to go this year unless Elliott's on the field, right?
They know that, but I think the bigger concern for them isn't so much where they're going to go this year. It's where's this team going to go 3-4 years down the line. And, as I've reported, their biggest issue is that Zeke's camp believes that he deserves a contract that is in line with Todd Gurley's. The Cowboys feel like Todd Gurley's contract was poorly structured, that it was a bad deal. So they're trying to reset the market on that. And as it's been explained to me as recently as yesterday, the Cowboys feel like they have put a offer on the table, not only for Zeke, but for Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott, that would put each one of them in the top five highest paid at their position. They feel good about them. In fact, it was characterized as generous offers. But they are also comfortable with and prepared to play this season without all three on proven deals, if that's what it comes to. In other words, they're ready to do a deal if the sides get serious about it, but it still feels like all three are pretty far apart right now.
Jane, what's the breakdown? Obviously, there's a real, speaking of Elliott in particular, there is a disconnect between what he wants and what they want to give him, but I would also think that he doesn't mind and they don't mind him kind of taking training camp off and saving all these reps and snaps for the regular season. So, I mean, there is kind of a positive nestled in whatever drama might actually exist here, right?
That is correct. It would be fair to say that it was unexpected that they want all of their guys in camp as Amari and Dak are. And, the Cabo thing, as it was explained to me, was not a good look. But they understand that it's a business deal. I'm told they're trying to get a deal done. It's just the two sides aren't, especially on the Ezekiel Elliott situation, I was told that they're off on everything as it applies to guaranteed money, as it applies to years. And so until they can meet in the middle a little bit more, it sounds like they're okay. doing this thing if they have to on a permit deal, reminding all of us when we've talked about this that Zeke as well as Amari as well as Dak are still under contract.
And Elliott has that deadline today about accruing a year of service, which then would delay unrestricted free agency. But I'm assuming because he assumes he'll sign something new in Dallas, that doesn't really matter, this deadline today, right?
That is fair. And also keep in mind, because of the fifth-year option, he could technically still try and accrue that unrestricted free agent year next year. This year just makes the more sense if you're Zeke's team and you're looking for leverage. This is a year that you would do that as opposed to next year. But I agree with you, Andrew, in the sense that it feels like they believe that there will be a contract deal that could get done, which makes this deadline a little bit arbitrary but still important if a deal doesn't get done. And that's where it gets a little complicated. But you've got to think that they believe that Zeke will get something done and he wants to stay here in Dallas. So if they blow through this deadline, which is how it feels, it doesn't feel, and I've been given no indication that Ezekiel Elliott boarded a plane last night or he was staying in the California area and we expect him at camp today. That's not the expectation. The expectation is that Zeke is not going to be here. If Zeke does show up to camp, it's going to be closer to the start of the season.
Jane, do you think he'll be there week one?
Here's why I believe that he'll be here, and I always try to be careful as a reporter to get into speculation and my opinion.
That's fair.
But I would say that the one thing that I've brought up when I've been asked this question is, how much money does Zeke have in the bank? Can he afford to miss games? I've got to think when you've missed six game checks already because of the suspension, that you can't afford to miss games. So that's where I feel like he's going to be here for week one. I believe he wants to be a good teammate. I believe he knows how good this team is. I believe he's used this period as the leverage he needed to get a new deal done. But I've been shocked every step of the way on this, as I believe the Cowboys have, when a lot of people that I spoke with believed that he would be here for camp in the first place. So it's hard to say, but I think when it comes down to money in the bank and what you can afford to skip out on, I just feel like with him still being on this deal, having missed those six game checks because of the suspension, it feels like he would need to show up to camp, that he would need to show up for games.
You know, Jane, you mentioned in terms of, you know, the Gurley being a bad deal and, you know, the Cowboys are looking, you know, down the line, not necessarily just looking and focused in on 2019. I'm curious about the trust factor. You know, we've talked about this a lot when talking about the Cowboys. We look at, you know, Cooper to a lesser extent, but when you compare Prescott and Elliott in terms of long-term commitments and financial packages, put the position aside, I get the sense they trust Prescott a lot more away from the football field. And how could you not, as compared to trusting Elliott?
It's hard to characterize that for sure. I think all of us that have been following the Zeke storylines, certainly that's how I think a lot of sensible people would view this. But I will tell you, in my private discussions with the Cowboys, they speak as highly of Zeke as they do about Dak, as they do about Amari. Now, look, that could be what they're saying to a reporter if you want to be a critical thinker and say, of course they've got concerns. A sensible person would. But in all my conversations with the Cowboys, I've been given no indication that it's the off-the-field stuff necessarily that's holding this thing up. It's the Todd Gurley stuff. And again, I want to be clear, it's not that they don't believe Todd Gurley's a good running back or that they wouldn't love to have a guy like Todd Gurley on their roster. And I love how that statement infuriated so many Rams fans that never actually listened to what I said. It was the way the deal was structured and the way the numbers were set that the Cowboys are having a hard time stomaching and trying to reset. So I just want to make that abundantly clear. They just don't believe that that deal was a good deal. And so they are trying to avoid that in their discussions with Zeke and in getting a deal done with him. I think what's been fascinating about the whole thing is people have long knocked the Cowboys. I've covered this team since 2011. People have long knocked the Cowboys for the fact that they overpaid players. They held on to players for too long. And now it seems like they're trying to exercise some prudence in their discussions and people are all of a sudden furious about the deal. It's not that the Cowboys, and again, this is a number of conversations with several people in this organization about these three contracts. It's not that they don't want to get these deals done. They just don't want to be record setters. They don't want to break the bank, and they feel like the offers are generous on the table and put all three of them in the position of top five highest paid at their positions.
So, Jane, what is the number two most important story in Cowboy camp right now, aside from these three guys?
Great question. I would say the most important story so far, the one that we focused on the most, isn't so much the contract of Dak, but Dak's development this offseason. You know, the biggest knock on Dak that I see all of it covering the Cowboys is he doesn't deserve the contract. Say what you will. You've got to, you know, obviously look at Carson Wentz's deal, what he made. You know, that is where the jump-off numbers are with Dak. But I think the most important thing is that there has been, I mean, you can see it, it's the eyeball test. There has been a marked improvement in Dak Prescott's accuracy and his footwork, his timing with his receivers this offseason. I really believe that that stems from the addition of John Kitna and Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore, of course, an offensive coordinator that we all sort of privately laughed about. You know, of all the guys that Jerry could have brought in, you bring in the guy that was Tony Romo's backup, you know, when Dak Prescott was a rookie and the fourth stringer on this roster, a guy named Jamil Chandler, who now plays on defense, was ahead of Dak Prescott, and you want to give him $30-plus million a year. It's because of the way he galvanizes the team. It's the respect that he commanded his rookie season when Tony Romo came back healthy and ready to go, and the Cowboys wouldn't even let him compete for his job, which was, again, fascinating to watch when I go back there, my first year at NFL Network covering that. But just seeing Dak's development, there has been an improvement. We're seeing it. You can see the accuracy change. So that's a storyline we've really been keeping an eye on. And I think I'm continuing to watch this Zach Martin situation. You know, once the best offensive line in football and still a lot of great guys on this line, you've created a lot of depth now because you've seen Tyron Smith have to miss games last year. You saw Travis Frederick miss the season because of Guillain-Barré. They've got some depth behind them. Zach Martin, of course, we're sort of monitoring his situation after the MRI. They feel like he's okay, but it's my understanding they're sort of keeping an eye on it. So that's something I'm keeping an eye on heading into camp. I don't expect him practicing today, et cetera. I think they're going to be careful with him, put him in a little bubble or at the head of the season, as they've done with Tyron Smith and guys like Sean Lee in the past. These veteran days get their days off. I think that's been a good thing. But, you know, Zach Martin got paid last year. You know, what does this mean? So keeping an eye on the health down the line is something else I'm watching.
You know, Jane, how does Witten look a year in the broadcast booth, after a year in the broadcast booth?
Shockingly younger.
Really?
Yes. When that got announced at Combine, I remember reaching out to a couple of my sources. The building was split on this, quite frankly. You know, if you remember Blake Jarwin and the Giants regular season finale, he had three touchdowns. He looked sharp. It felt like the offense, as it was described to me, they had sort of started collaborating without Scott Linehan in that final game. They wanted to see what life looked like without him. You know, he had moved up to the booth a couple of weeks before off from the sidelines, and they started utilizing Blake Jarwin at tight end. All of a sudden, this offense wasn't that predictable, and they liked what they saw from him. And so this notion that Witten was coming back, a guy who never came off the football field, there was concern that that was going to stunt the development of the younger guys. But I would say that Witten has come back re-energized, as he described it to me. This is a show-me league. He feels humbled. He feels more appreciative of the second, you know, chance. He feels conditioned. I remember going up there with Scott Hansen, one of my colleagues. He happened to be in Dallas and called me up and said, "Hey, Slater, I know it's your day off. Do you want to go up to the Star in Frisco?" And I said, "Of course, that's exactly what I want to do on my day off, Scott." But we went up there, and there at the training table in the cafeteria was Jason Witten with his iPad, the playbook, with the players, and this was early March. And I thought that was fascinating. It showed that he was ready to get back to work. And he does feel energized. He's back to barking to the players in a constructive way, to the coaches. He never stops talking. He's always got input, and he just seems genuinely excited to be back, but he just feels younger. I can't explain why. But he feels younger, and that's not me selling anything to you. That's been several people's observations. So with that being said, you know, I've noticed that Jarwin's kind of kicked it up a little bit, so the competition has been good. And I think that's what we're finally seeing on this team with the Cowboys is some competition in a couple of spots.
Jane, besides us bothering you at 5:30 local time and angry Todd Gurley fans, is this the best training camp assignment in the NFL, the Cowboys and Oxnard?
Oh,
hands down. I mean, I cover the Saints, too, and this is no knock on the Saints or Metairie, but it's just a little bit different.
A little less humid.
Right, you don't mind getting up at 5:30 in the morning in Oxnard, California, right?
But like, 60 degrees is a breeze, beautiful.
Yes, yeah. I mean, literally, there are worse assignments. This is my fourth training camp. I don't take it for granted. It is called the glamour beat for a reason.
Jane Slater covers the Cowboys for the NFL Network. Hey, Jane, we appreciate you getting up early for us. Have a good day at camp today, and hopefully we can get you on again real soon.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on, guys.
You got it.
Thanks, Jane.
She does a great job. She really does. That is, I mean, you want to compare it? Oxnard, California compared to, like, MetLife Stadium?
I think Oxnard wins most head-to-head comparisons.
Right. I'm driving to the Hambo on Saturday to go do a broadcast locally for WFA in New York, the Hambletonian. Great. And Goral and everyone over there and Rachel Ryan at the Meadowlands are fantastic. But I'm going, I'm driving through there. And I see Giant training camp, the fans, and they're, you know, playing, you know, pickup football in the parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing around.
Yeah. I think
there's literally nothing around where the Giants practice facility is. And if you don't know, it's basically, you know, opposite side or same area, opposite side of the parking lot as compared to where MetLife Stadium is. The same complex. You could walk from the stadium to the Giant offices.
Yeah, you're surrounded by smokestacks, bridges, factories, this crazy mall thing that's been a joke around here that's been being built for like a decade that's never actually been finished and working and has like an indoor ski slope. And meanwhile, Jane, I think, goes to Malibu and surfs on her days off from Cowboys
camp.
Amazing.
Good for
in
her.
Wine country.
That's great. Good for her.
We get to look at Mike all day.
We got the undercard for you. Yes. Mike
and Pete. Are Pete and I wearing the same
about fantasy football?
Are we wearing the same shirt, me and Pete?
No,
similar color?
Mine's more neon. No.
It's fair.
He's got neon green. His lights up in the dark.
It does, actually.
The undercard. Taz, Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Certainly are on a busy Tuesday morning. Good stuff there with Jane Slater from NFL Network. Covers the Dallas Cowboys out there in beautiful Oxnard, California. It's been a good show so far. We hit upon a lot of big topics, a lot of big issues going around the National Football League and the NBA and all. Let's get to it, though. Here we go, the undercard.
Taz and the Moose present the Undercard. The stories from today's rundown that we haven't talked about on the show.
All right, Michael, what do we got?
All right, so we've been mentioning Vince Carter during the show that he'll be back for his 22nd season. His rookie season was 1998, and the movie that won the Oscar that year was Titanic. Were you a fan of the film?
I love Titanic. I did. I remember where I saw it. I saw it in an old school theater in Rockland County that actually had an organist playing before the movie came on. I swear to you, organist beforehand. This is like a theater from like the 1940s, 1930s. I think it was in Suffern, New York. Saw it, listen, it didn't have the lounge chairs that you get now and that recline and, you know, the tray service where they're bringing a fine glass of wine or your favorite cocktail to go along with, like, a steak and potatoes as you're eating as you're watching a movie. No, old school popcorn, candy, soda, old theater. Watched it. It was fantastic. Atmosphere added to it as well. Yeah, I love Titanic. How about you, Bo?
Love Titanic. Never got a girl to let me draw her. Like in the movie, that line doesn't work in reality.
No, it does not.
Certainly doesn't work in current times.
No.
Maybe it would have been back in 1912, but it just, it didn't play out well.
No, that did not. You know what movie I watched the other day? My wife told me, and I didn't watch it when I should have. Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Fantastic.
Still.
I loved it.
It gets the Moose Seal of Approval.
Oh, it's great.
The Hoof of Approval.
And the music's fantastic. You know why he won the Academy Award for Actor of the Year. I mean, he was unbelievable as Freddie Mercury. And he actually felt like he was him. It was great. And I thought the movie was well done. I thought it was well written. It took you through. It never really dragged. I thought it was a really good movie, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Don't leave 1998 yet, because Mike mentions the number one song that year, Too Close. That was the song me and my roommates played before we went out at night in college to get us fired up for an evening.
What song is Too Close?
Does Pete have it queued up here? No?
No. We'll get it.
Maybe when we're grinding.
Oh! Is that the song you used to play before you went out?
That was like the official dorm room song as we were pre-gaming. It was in the rotation to get us ready for the night out
at
Alumni Hall. Well, it was 1998, 1999.
Wonder why painting a picture never worked for you.
Only the hits, Moose. Only the hits.
Yeah, that's it, right. That's it. I thought it was going to be No Diggity, No Doubt.
Well, good reference.
Yeah.
Black Sheep played at Fordham when I was there, and they played that song.
Nice.
So keep it coming, Moose.
Yeah, the lyrics to that song are explicit, cannot play.
No, and surprisingly could be sung at a Catholic college.
All right, next. Oh!
We'll have to debate that in the break, folks. Panda Express is debuting a new meal. It's the Szechuan hot chicken, like the Nashville hot chicken. Your interest in a Szechuan-style Nashville hot chicken.
You'd have to explain to me what the difference is.
Hot chicken.
I don't know.
Hot chicken is fried chicken that's very spicy.
Right. Yes.
So Panda Express, a chain Chinese restaurant that you see in strip malls all over the place, or in malls, you know, the food court. So Panda Express is now unveiling Szechuan Nashville hot chicken.
Yes, it's their take on the hot chicken.
So does it come with sauce and vegetables? Is it over rice, or is it just like a piece of fried chicken?
It's up to you. You can, however you'd like to pair it. I'm assuming, but I can't speak for the Panda Express people. But yes, you can get it with vegetables.
How many little pepper icons will it have next to its name on the menu?
I don't know.
To denote its spiciness.
You ever get hot oil when you go get Chinese food?
No. What do you mean?
Instead of hot mustard, you could ask for hot oil.
No, I didn't know that.
So hot oil is something where they take, like, I guess it's an olive oil, or I don't know what the oil is of choice, and they have it marinated with hot peppers. So it's very, very spicy. But you can drizzle it onto your food to add a little extra kick to it. That's just a side note for all you Chinese food fans out there. Anyway, no, I would not go get hot. If I'm going to go get hot chicken, I want to go to a place that specializes in hot chicken.
Right.
I don't want to get hot chicken at Panda Express, which is for Chinese food.
Right. I'm going to go get it in Nashville. And I also need to eat my Chinese food at a grittier place than Panda Express. Since it's a chain, it's clean, it's well kept. Like, I like my Chinese restaurant to have a little grime to it.
Oh, yeah.
My neighborhood one is like probably doesn't pass health inspections, but that makes it good.
No, it does not.
It does. Some character.
My stomach just turned.
Panda Express is too mainstream.
What do you want? Like, you want to be concerned about what you're actually eating?
I mean, aren't you always when you eat out?
No, I'm not concerned. No, if I order a burger, I'm getting a burger.
My local Chinese place has some character. I like that. Panda Express doesn't. It's too sterile.
Well, Panda Express gives you good food for what it. I mean, I would not get hot chicken at Panda Express. That would be like going to Panda Express and be like, can I get a cheeseburger? Or a hot dog and fries. No. I even think it's weird when I go to a Chinese restaurant and they're making wings. I think that's strange. No. You go to a Chinese food, you get Chinese food. Wings and fries at a Chinese food place? No. It doesn't work. No. I want my lo mein, fried rice, and an egg roll. Not
and
that
now
particular
I'm starving.
Order. Yes. All right. Next. Oh, no.
That one's going to go too.
Yay!
Give you a quick
one. Goodness.
Mikey B and his cat, look who it is.
The Rams have season tickets. It's $250 for the season. That's $31 per game. Would that interest you?
I would buy those. For Rams season tickets, where are you sitting for $31
a game? Good question. It auto-selects you for each game, so you don't know.
And you can get up to four tickets, depending, I guess, on availability. But you don't know location, and you only find out 24 hours beforehand, so you can't resell them.
Dude, $250 a game?
It's worth the gamble.
$250 for the season? $31 a game?
To see the Rams!
Right. Bogus. Good job, brother.
I'm in.
Jane Slater, tremendous for joining us. Mike Pete across the way as well. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. Have yourself a wonderful Tuesday. Till tomorrow. Peace.
There's got to be a 10-second runoff here.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.